This podcast is brought to you by the Kansas Hospital Association.
Welcome to today's federal on-call episode of KHA's Plain Spoken Podcast. I'm Audrey Dunkel, and with me today, as always, is Landon Fulmer, who's our boots on the ground in D.C.
So, Landon, we're coming up on the second deadline to pass something for a 2024 budget, which is Friday, and it sounds like we have a deal, but it sounds like there's some concern that that may not go forward and we may be at risk of a shutdown. What's going on?
Well, thanks for having me on, Audrey. We are now into our second package of spending bills. The first package was passed before the deadline about a week and a half ago. And this package actually included all of the healthcare extenders that we had been pushing as part of KHA, along with our friends at the American Hospital Association, for extension of Medicare-dependent hospital funding or low-volume hospital funding, for a delay in the DSH cuts related to the ACA. All of that was packaged in the first grouping of bills that's already been passed. Outstanding now are bills that fund the operations of particularly importance to KHA, the Department of Health and Human Services. There is, as they say, white smoke. They say they have a deal, but we have not seen the text yet. And the fact is that federal funding runs out for Health and Human Services, as well as some other agencies, at midnight on Friday. And the way that Congress works, it's going to be very difficult for them to pass this bill before midnight on Friday. So there is a bit of a rocky road ahead. We have not seen the text yet, but we expect that that's going to come out perhaps by the time people are listening to this podcast.
Terrific. Well, I'll be keeping my fingers crossed so that we can move on to the 2025 budget. Now, we know the president has put his budget out for 2025, and unlike the Kansas legislature that usually uses the governor's budget as their base for their budget, Congress doesn't do the same thing, but still means that we need to know what's happening with the administration and what their basic policy priorities are for 2025. So looking at the budget, what are you seeing that we need to pay attention to?
Yeah, the president's budget in D.C. is more of a policy document than anything else, because Congress has its own budgeting arm. The executive branch has the Office of Management and Budget, but Congress has the Congressional Budget Office. So those two organizations, one legislative branch, one executive branch, work together on what they feel are consensus estimates for tax revenue and what the impact of different federal programs is going to be in terms of how much money is going to be spent. So Congress is able to essentially write its own budget. So it doesn't rely on the president's budget in quite the same way that the state legislature relies on the governor's budget. That said, looking at what the president views as important helps guide the conversation as we go forward throughout the rest of calendar year 2024 and even into this upcoming election cycle. So some of the things that I think are really important for us to continue to pay attention to, one of them is the upcoming PAYGO cliff related to the sequestration holiday that was put into place during the COVID pandemic. If the 4% PAYGO cuts go into effect, it would cause a very large cut in baseline Medicare payments to hospitals. This is something that we have successfully fought off in the past, these PAYGO cuts going into effect. We believe that there will be some off-ramp to be able to waive those or push them into the future. But one of the things that we don't want to do as part of it is push sequestration's deadline further into the future. So this started out as a program that was going to help get the federal budget in order by 2024. And look where we are right now. And now the deadline is out there at 2031. And it seems like this is a response to crises that are happening in the moment, is just to extend that on the back end to make the budget numbers look good. So we're going to be talking to Congress about fixing the PAYGO gap while also making sure to not extend sequestration on the other end. There are other things that are of, I think, particular importance right now. The president included $800 million in cybersecurity grant funding to help, quote, high-need, low-resourced hospitals cope with cyber attacks that threaten their operations and medical records. This is something that, of course, has become very prominent recently in the media. It's something that we need to be careful about as we are in this world where state actors, non-state actors are looking to hack into and steal Americans' medical, private medical data. And this would help with grants to hospitals to help them improve their cybersecurity, many of which would probably be in the state of Kansas. There's also $150 billion over 10 years that's getting added to Medicare's Home and Community-Based Services Program. And I think one of the most interesting little tidbits, if you will, this is not something that is going to happen this year. This is more, again, the president putting out a marker saying this is an important thing to look at in the future. And that is that he put into the budget a higher payroll tax on Americans earning more than $400,000 per year. And this increase in the payroll tax for those Americans would, in theory, ensure that the hospital insurance trust fund in Medicare would never run out of money. That's the projection anyway from the Office of Management and Budget. As we know right now on its current path, the HI trust fund is scheduled to run out of money in 2031. And the scary thing about the trust fund running out is that when the trust fund runs out, they just simply stop paying. It's not like they set a program in place to change their payment structure. They just stop paying. And so that would affect providers at the very front end of any complete deterioration of the trust fund. So it's interesting that the president is recognizing this long-term problem. We know that this way of addressing it is not going to happen this year, not in an election year, but it's something that the president's putting out there as a priority, that he sees that there's an issue coming in the future. And it's one that I think we all recognize in the hospital community as something that needs to be addressed. The last thing that I think we need to be careful about, the president put in his budget an allowance for commercial insurance carriers to ban payments for facility fees as part of their telehealth services. This is an element of what I jokingly refer to as private sector site neutral payment schemes. We know about Medicare-based site neutral payment schemes that we've been fighting against very successfully at the federal level over the past year and a half. But this is kind of on the other side of it with the commercial insurance carriers. This is something that is a hot button issue. We're going to continue to try to put out the fires whenever they pop up. And it's something that we need to pay attention to because now it's in the president's major policy document for the year.
Wonderful. Well, it looks like we have a lot on our plate for this next session. So we know we're headed to DC in a few weeks for the AHA annual meeting, and that always includes visits to the Hill. And maybe one of the first things we ought to talk about is the issue of site-neutral payments. Talked about it in theory in the president's budget, and we know that this is one of the responses that we've been seeing more often in the House than the Senate, but as a way to cut costs in the Medicare program. Do you think we'll be seeing that again as we talk more about 2025 and we get into the lame duck session?
So one of the things that is driving this large discussion on site neutral payments in the House is that this is a priority of the current House Energy and Commerce Chairwoman, Kathy McMorris Rodgers from the state of Washington. And she recently announced her retirement. And so as we go through the rest of fiscal year 25 discussions throughout the calendar year of 2024, we feel that there is going to be a kind of ramping up of the rhetoric on this and the pressure to try to get some kind of bill done before her term in office and her term as chairwoman of ENC comes to a close. So this is something that we're going to have to keep a very close eye on. We continue to educate our members of the House on the importance of treating hospitals like hospitals. Hospitals do all kinds of things that other types of providers don't do. We have emergency rooms. We have a place to go if you break your leg at 2 a.m. where you can get your x-rays taken and you can get your leg set in one place, and you can receive your physical therapy there later on as you recover from it. We're different from other healthcare providers, and we need to continue to make that argument to Congress so that they don't view that we're just some healthcare provider that could just be operating on the same cost structure as a community health center or a primary care physician. That's just not how hospitals operate. And we need to continue to make that argument to show how it is that we're different, because currently the way that Medicare pays out reflects that difference, and we need to keep it that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That continues to be a tough one, because I know, you know, on the basics, you look at it and you go, an MRI is an MRI is an MRI. Why does it cost more at a hospital? So we'll keep fighting that fight. Also on our list is obviously 340B continues to be a discussion, not only at the federal level, but at the state level, where they're trying to chip away a little bit at 340B. But one of the great things that has happened in the last few months is there is a discussion draft of the Sustained 340B Act. And that's from that bipartisan Senate working group that Senator Moran is part of, that's been working on some kind of palatable solution to 340B to keep the program moving forward. So this bill draft was put out a few weeks ago. They've been asking for some comments. We've got an internal committee of KHA hospitals that are 340B hospitals that are working on the KHA response to this, as well as their individual responses. But part of what's in the bill is it does take away the limitation of, or the argument that the number of contract pharmacies should be limited. So it does remove that and would codify that no, they should not be limited. Would also codify the purpose of the program, as opposed to just saying, hey, we've created this program, this is the purpose, and it's not in statute. There are some additional regulatory burdens, I would say, for hospitals, because one of the big arguments is transparency. And so there are some additional transparency requirements. But as we look at those, we do see a little bit of what was in the recommendation that our hospitals made to that group on how to address transparency issues. So those comments are due August 1st, and we will put that draft out. We'll share that in our current report to let you know what it is we're talking about. So Landon, knowing that this is out there, what's our anticipation of when we'll see this actually come out as a bill finalized? And what do you think is going to happen with that?
So anybody who's introducing bills this late in the session, so we are in the second year of this Congress, and Congress resets, of course, after every general election every 2 years. So we're in the second year. At this point, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get it into the process so that you can be part of the budget negotiation at the very end of the Congress. This is how, if you'll remember, we got the original Rural Emergency Hospital Program passed into law, is that it was introduced as not just one bill, but there were different bills, different ideas that were out there. And eventually we were able to get those ideas codified as a year-end budgetary item. And whether it's the 340B bill that we're talking about here, or it's the REH 2.0 bill that is under discussion as well, we're looking for summer or fall introductions and really getting it into that grinder of a cycle late in the session so that we can have it alive for final budget negotiations. That's really the goal, is to have it out there, to have it vetted so that we can have it on the table at the very close of the year.
Great. And Landon, thank you so much for bringing up the REH bill. Now, we've had a number of discussions after the REH legislation came out, and certainly as we've listened or looked at what CMS is putting out in the regulatory space on the REHs, and we found out that there were a number of things that need to be tweaked. Not that it wasn't good legislation to start, but there are a few things that maybe weren't clear or were missed. And we're specific to Kansas. And one of those is allowing hospitals that have closed within a specific time frame to reopen as rural emergency hospitals. Now, Senator Moran in December introduced legislation that would do just that small part. Representative LaTurner then has turned around and introduced similar legislation to do that. We also know that Senator Moran and his team are working on a more robust version of the REH legislation that would address things like when a hospital is closed and maybe another facility has come in and provided REH-like services in that space, would allow that to become an REH and become its own entity. Also addressing the issue of whether or not a hospital that was deemed a critical access hospital by the governor prior to 2006 would be able to, if they became an REH, could they come back and be a critical access hospital? CMS is saying, no, we don't think that's the way this reads. You would still have to pass the current requirements to become a critical access hospital. And for a number of our hospitals, that wouldn't be possible because they don't meet the requirements. There are a number of other small things out there that we're talking about as well. But Landon, as you said, we expect to see something in the summer or fall, and we hope to see it move forward then before the elections. So, Landon, what else is on our list?
So I would also add that this necessary provider designation is a hot button issue in general. It's not just with REH retroversion, but it's also with PPS hospitals right now that are looking to transition to critical access hospitals. So there's a couple of bills, one in the Senate, one in the House, that would allow for a new window for necessary provider designations to be made. This bill would take care of that issue, by the way, related specifically to REHs as well. This would be a broader bill that would address necessary provider designations in general. But of course, there are other issues with REHs that need to be addressed, and so we're gonna keep pressing on these. There are also workforce agenda items, whether that's expanding the workforce by allowing nurses to enter the country with unused visas, whether that is allowing college students who are trained as nurses and receive BSNs to be allowed to stay while they're transitioning from a student visa to a work visa, and then also greater workforce safety protections for our healthcare employees who really do put their lives on the line when they're treating some of the most difficult patients, particularly in emergency room settings. So there's a lot of different bills that are out there that we're paying attention to, and we're trying to drum up support among our congressional delegation for.
All right. Well, I think that's it for today. Landon, thanks so much for your updates. We really appreciate your work as the boots on the ground for us in Washington, D.C., giving us the latest. And we will talk to you next time.
For more information on Kansas health issues, go to kha-net.org.